Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. Instead, go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI and a watch and tab on any plan. Only on Verizon.
With new line on my plan. Service plan required for watch and tab. Additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. Instead, go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI and a watch and tab on any plan. Only on Verizon.
With new line on my plan. Service plan required for watch and tab. Additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today is Thursday, February 13th, 2025. On today's episode of the show, we are going to dive into the mailbag, and then we're going to gather around the virtual water cooler and talk about what we've been watching. My name is Ben Pearson. I am an editor at slashfilm.com, and I'm joined on today's episode by Slash Film editor and chief film critic, Chris Evangelista.
Hello.
All right, Chris. So tomorrow, Captain America: Brave New World comes out. I haven't seen it yet. Yeah, so I think we're gonna devote tomorrow's episode to talking about that. I've heard not great things about the film, but you know, we'll get there. We'll save it for tomorrow's discussion. But in the lead up, typically on Thursdays, I like to try to do like ranking episodes or something. And I was just really butting my head against the wall trying to come up with like a good ranking idea, and Anthony Mackie's solo career is not super interesting to me. And I was just like kind of flailing around looking for ideas. Like at one point I was talking to my wife about it, and I was maybe going to suggest that we could talk about like the top five movies where birds are the main characters, because Falcon, like in honor of the Falcon. And I was like, well, this all just kind of feels a little silly. So I thought instead we would just dive into the mailbag and then do another water cooler. I know we just did one yesterday, but I haven't talked to you about what you've been watching in a little bit. So hopefully this will be interesting for people. So I wanted to read one thing from Ian from Austin, Texas. This is just a recommendation. He says, "Dear Slash Film, I haven't heard you talk about this on your podcast, but there's an amazing Chinese action epic playing at my Austin area Regal Cinemas. It's called Creation of the Gods 2, Demon Force. This movie is incredibly entertaining. Run, don't walk to see Creation of the Gods 2 on the biggest screen you can find. Please do a review once someone's seen it." So I have not heard of this franchise before, and I watched the trailer, and it is, I mean, like, this person referred to it as incredibly entertaining. I mean, there's like giants and dragons and warriors, and like, if you like larger than life bombastic action stuff, yeah, maybe check your local listings and see if Creation of the Gods 2 Demon Force is playing near you. I'd never heard of this before. Chris, I assume you're not up on the Creation of the Gods franchise.
I've never even heard of that. Do you need to see the first one to understand the second one? I'm guessing you have to. Is it streaming anywhere?
I don't know. It kind of seemed like you did. It seemed like there was a lot of mythology and stuff, and I couldn't tell how much of that is just like tapping into religious imagery and stuff like that from that part of the world that I'm not super familiar with, or if it's like all self-referential mythology and things like that, you know, referring back to what happened in the first movie. But anyway, just a shout out from Ian, a recommendation for Creation of the Gods 2 Demon Force. I can't speak to its quality or anything, but I just wanted to read that real quick. And then Jorge from Lisbon, Portugal, sent us an email. I'm going to try to condense this because it's a little long, but he says, "I'm writing to discuss a trend that has become increasingly apparent in recent years and which I anticipate will be a significant talking point following the 2025 Academy Award nominations: the concentration of nominations among a small number of films." And Jorge goes on to say that over the past decade or so, typically there's somewhere between 50 and 60-ish total nominations across all categories, but it seems like a disproportionate share of these nominations frequently go to a select few films, which creates a situation where, despite a relatively large pool of nominated films overall, a handful of titles dominate the conversation and the awards themselves. Jorge points out that, like, this diminishes the recognition of other worthy films that might only receive one or two nominations or are totally shut out. And then it can lead to just the sense of kind of boring predictability and lack of real surprise during the award ceremony itself. And so Jorge says, I'm curious to hear your thoughts on this trend. Do you believe this concentration of nominations is a significant issue? If so, what potential solutions could the Academy consider to promote a more equitable distribution of nominations and a wider recognition of cinematic achievement? So, Chris, do you have any thoughts on this topic?
Yeah, you know, I wish I knew what the solution is, but this is something that's bothering me, because it's not just the Academy. It's like voting bodies in general. I'm a member of Critics' Choice, and the Critics' Choice Awards happened last weekend, I believe. And so, like, I don't want to throw my organization under the bus, but some of the nominees are like, why are we nominating this? Like, I understand why the Academy will nominate certain things, but critics groups should be better than that. Like, we should be able to like champion things that aren't just like the same group of films. Like, it's very like, I don't know. Award season in general has always bugged me. I am not a fan of award season. I know there are people who like, there are like awards bloggers who make this like their entire personality. And I don't like it at all. I don't like turning movies into sports. Like, that's what this feels like it's doing. I also don't like that, like, the films that get nominated, half the time they're getting nominated not because of merit. It's just because they have a really good campaign behind them. It's all politics. It's all like how they're pushed to voters, how like PR people handle them. And it's just a bummer. Like, we should be able to, I don't know what the solution is. I don't think there is a solution. It's just like, it's become very gamified. It's become very like recency bias is a big deal. Like, 9 times out of 10, the majority of stuff that's getting nominated is stuff that got released near the end of the year, because that's what people remember seeing. Like, I don't know what the solution is. I don't think there is a solution. Ideally, the best solution is to get rid of award season. Like, I would love it if award season just went away. And that'll never happen because people like it too much. But if it were up to me, we would not have an award season. I don't think it's good. I don't think it helps anyone out. I think it's just a problem. And, awards bloggers, sorry, but I wish you didn't exist.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough because I am certainly sympathetic to the idea that there's an entire industry that goes into this, not just awards bloggers, but like caterers and people who work the events and stuff like that in LA and New York and other cities where they hold screenings. And there's like, you know, it's a pretty significant part of the economy that functions for whatever it is, five or six months out of the year or something while all this conversation is going on. So like, I would kind of hate, on one hand, I would hate to like throw out the whole thing just because I would kind of put a lot of people out of work, but I totally understand what you're saying. And I like, fundamentally, it's like Sing Sing or Dune Part 2, which of them is a better movie? And it's like a ludicrous conversation to have, you know, because they're just on such different scales and doing two different things as movies. So it's always, yeah, a little wild. Jorge says, do you believe this concentration of nominations is a significant issue? I mean, significant compared to what, really? Like, we obviously have a lot bigger things to worry about in our real world, but I don't know. I would love to see always, almost across the board in any circumstance, a wider selection of nominees or attention be put on whatever it is, whatever industry we're talking about, whatever awards we're talking about. Like, I just love the idea of spreading the wealth and putting things on people's radar. That's what we try to do in this show, especially in episodes like this, where we're just like talking about what we've been seeing and checking out recently and stuff like that. And I feel like this serves as a good jumping off point or touch point for people to come and just figure out, hey, does that sound interesting to me? Maybe I can add that to my watch list or whatever. So I love the idea of spreading the wealth and bouncing stuff around as much as possible. But yeah, it's tough to figure out what a potential solution could be for this.
I just hate how like everything is like a award season has particularly become like this sort of like foregone conclusion. Like for months now, people have been like, I'm going to use an example. We got to nominate Emilia Perez. We got to like, why does that movie have to be nominated? That is a bad movie. And now we're in this situation where the star of that movie is like an outcast because she said these horrible things online, but it's like, this was all avoidable. We didn't have to nominate that. Like no one had to nominate that movie. Like, it just felt like, well, we gotta nominate Emilia Perez. I was like, why? Why? And like, here's another, like Naomi Scott's performance in Smile 2 is probably one of the best performances I've seen of 2024. But she had no chance in hell of ever being nominated for anything because that's a horror movie, that's a sequel. It's like, why have we built this world where stuff like Emilia Perez is like, it's a foregone conclusion that that's gonna get nominated even though it's a piece of shit. Whereas something like Naomi Scott's performance in Smile 2 would never, ever get nominated for anything because it's a horror movie. Like, I hate that it's like we've built this movie world where it's like this is the way things have to be. And it's like, why? Why do they have to be this? Why do we have to accept this? Like, I don't know. Like, honestly, I feel like I'm going through like a slow motion nervous breakdown where like the pop culture landscape as a whole, I don't understand it anymore. And I don't understand what, like the Super Bowl just happened. And like, why do we have to care about Super Bowl commercials? Like we don't have to care about this anymore. Can we just like there's all this stuff that like, we're sort of like, we just accept that this is the way things are. Let's push back a little bit. Let's try a little harder. We can all do a little better. I guess that's the solution. Let's all do a little better. Can we all, let's all join hands and agree to do something better. That's what I want to happen.
I love that. Okay. So let's now, I guess, transition into what we've been watching. Actually, I'll go first because I haven't really been watching much. I mean, obviously, I just did an episode yesterday, so I haven't had a ton of time. But I did catch this movie from 1939 called Gunga Din. Have you ever seen this, Chris?
I saw this when I was – it's got Cary Grant in it, right? I saw it when I was
it
a kid.
It does.
Yeah. When I was very young, I watched this. Yeah.
Yeah, so it's Cary Grant, it's Victor McLaughlin, and Douglas Fairbanks Jr., and it's basically this big, epic adventure movie where these guys are playing British soldiers out in – who are colonizing India, and they come across this thuggy or tuggy, I think they pronounce it multiple ways in the movie, this Indian murder cult out there in the Indian countryside. And there's Cary Grant's character is like a treasure hunter kind of guy and discovers this big temple that has all this gold in it. And Gunga Din is the name of the water bearer who is basically like an Indian citizen who was like subjugated by the British army. And of course, the movie came out in 1939, so it wants you to sympathize with and empathize with the white characters in this movie, the colonizers, and has like no awareness whatsoever of like the politics or you know, the idea that like anyone could possibly think that maybe we should be pulling for the other side in this equation.
And this is based on I think it's based on a poem by Rudyard Kipling. Is that right? I seem to remember there's a scene. I like the thing that I remember most of the movie at the very end, like Rudyard Kipling shows up as a character, I think at the very end. And it's like, I'm going to write a poem about this. Like that's not what he says. I remember something like that happening. Like he shows up at the end. And it's like, this gives me an idea for a poem.
Yeah, there's I thought about you actually when that happened because there's for some reason I was like, I feel like Chris would have a reaction to this. Like you would either be like, this is so silly that I'm into it, or you would be like infuriated by the idea that this happened. Because at one point, the Rudyard Kipling character, who is on screen for a total of 1.5 minutes or something in this movie, right? He barely shows up at all. And he shows up in like the final act of the movie, like almost at the very end, and someone refers to him as Mr. Journalist. And I was like, who is this character? Like, we've literally never seen this guy before. And then at the very end, probably 5 minutes later or something, a character is like, oh yes, Mr. Kipling, come, you know, take a look at this or whatever. And he's like, got his little notebook or whatever. And it's like, oh, I see what you're doing there. Okay. Yeah. So yeah, I mean, obviously this movie is like incredibly racist. It's 1939. So what do you expect? Basically, and there's like characters in brown face and all of that kind of stuff. So if you're able to separate that kind of thing from the modern context and like look at it as a movie, it's kind of incredible what George Stevens, the director, was able to pull off here on just in terms of like the scale of this thing. There's like hundreds and hundreds of soldiers and actors running around in the desert and the mountains, and it's very impressive. But yeah, overall, like it's kind of a fun, it's a little long. It's like, let's see, 117 minutes according to Wikipedia. It's a little long. It feels like a little stretched out, but Cary Grant is always fun to watch, I think. And there's some pretty fun stuff in here. I think the most interesting thing for me about Gunga Din is that it's very clear that Steven Spielberg and George Lucas took a lot of imagery and inspiration from this movie in order to make the Indiana Jones movies. There's so much familiar stuff. There's like a snake pit at one point. There's a big bridge, a rope bridge that looks very much like something out of Temple of Doom. And then the thuggy murder cult is the same group that is featured in Temple of Doom. So there's just a lot of DNA of Indiana Jones that you can find first in Gunga Din if you're interested in checking that out. So yeah, kind of an old school recommendation there, but that is that from 1939. And then let's take a break and then we'll come back and talk about what you've been watching, Chris.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest, over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Tanger Outlets, find hundreds of brands at unbeatable value. Save big on outerwear, must-have handbags, active essentials, classic favorites, footwear, and more, up to 70% off. Shop Nike Factory Store, Coach, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. All the best brands, all on sale, every day. Only at Tanger Outlets.
Okay, so tell me what you've been watching recently.
Oh, yeah, I got a few things. So I watched Apple Cider Vinegar, which is the new Netflix limited or series, whatever you want to call it. It's this is based on a true story, although they fictionalize it a little bit. It stars Caitlin Dever. It's about this woman named Belle Gibson, who was from Australia, and she was an influencer, and she claimed she had brain cancer, and she used like natural remedies to basically cure her cancer. And as you can guess, that was a complete lie. Like, she never had cancer, and they made it up. And so this is like about her like downfall, and it also has a bunch of other characters. Some of them are fictionalized, some of them are based on real people. I thought this was pretty good. I do feel like it does this thing that a lot of shows do now, where it jumps around in the timeline, because I guess somewhere someone thought that was a cool idea and they stuck with it. And I feel like they didn't need to do that. Like, they could have just made this like a linear story and it would have worked fine. But yeah, I thought this was good. It's also really depressing because there's a subplot about this woman who actually does have cancer, and she starts like believing Belle Gibson's like crap, and she's, you know, she refuses actual medical treatment to get all these like quote-unquote natural remedies. And it's just,
oh no,
it's bleak because it's very relevant to the time. Like, the day we're recording this, Robert Kennedy just got confirmed as like health secretary, and you know, I don't want to get political, but he's a nut. He is a full-blown anti-vax lunatic, and now he's like running the government health. And this is the world we've built for ourselves again, where people are just like, I'm just asking questions, I'm doing my own research. And it's very dangerous and it's very disturbing. I did like, what I liked about this is like, it completely shuts down all that bullshit. There's no like, well, maybe she has a point. Like, there's a scene where a journalist is trying to write a story about Belle Gibson, and he goes to a doctor And he gives her like this printout of all these things that Bell Gibson claimed she did to treat her cancer. And he's like, could you take a look at this and tell me if there's any truth behind it? And the doctor looks at it for like a second and she immediately is like, no. And the journalist is like, well, how can you know so quickly? And the doctor is like, because I went to medical school. And it's like, like, I really like that moment because like, it's no nonsense. And that's really the way, like, I'm sorry. That's the way these things have to be treated. I'm very tired of people who are like, well, I Googled this. Like, you know what? That's not going to tell you jack shit, especially now when half of Google is overrun with AI stuff, which is 100% wrong. Like, I don't know, man. It's just, it's a bleak, these are bleak times. And the show, it's darkly funny. Like, it plays up how absurd this all is. But when it was over, I just kind of felt like, you know, like, yeah, eventually this woman had a downfall where, you know, she was called out for her bullshit, but it doesn't change the fact that the world we're living in right now is full of people who are just like, you know, it's one thing to buy into this. It's another thing to profit off it. And I think that's the problem. Like I can have some sympathy for people who are like, you know, I don't want to rely on traditional medicine. I want to find something else that will cure me. Like, I can sympathize with that. But then you have people who are literally profiting off this. Like, they're going on TikTok and they're going on Instagram and they're running our government who are just like, you know, just profiting off of people's like desperation, people who are desperate for a cure that doesn't exist. And they're like, you know, take this natural remedy. And it's like, people are going to die because of this. And I don't know. It's really upsetting, you know?
Yeah, I mean, you were talking earlier about like with the Oscar stuff, like, why does it have to be like this? Maybe we can do things differently. And I think some people are thinking that way, but just about the wrong things. They're applying that to things that, you know, have basis in science and like fact. And, you know, we've determined the right way to do things over the course of hundreds of years of trial and error and mass death. And like, that's the reason that we do things. Like, yeah, we can change the Oscar categories because it's all like a made up award show that has very few actual real life consequences. But like, there's real stuff here. Like, I you just can't apply that mindset to everything in life. It just doesn't work. So
yeah. And it's like, again, I have sympathy. Like, the American healthcare system is a nightmare. It's a disaster. It's, you know, made for profit. It's, you know, people get screwed, but it's like, that's not it's one thing to be like, I'm against big pharma, but it's like, you can be against the business side of it, but it doesn't change the fact that like, there are actual scientists and actual doctors doing actual research to find answers to these things. Like, those are the people you should trust. You should not trust some like 20 something on TikTok who was like, I drank, you know, olive oil. Like what is I don't know how else to phrase this. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So the show is on Netflix. It's called Apple Cider Vinegar. How many episodes is it, Chris?
It is, I'm looking right at 6. So it's a pretty quick watch. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So what else have you been watching recently?
Last night I finally got to see The Monkey, which is the new Oz Perkins horror comedy based on the Stephen King short story. And Oz Perkins, of course, directed Long Legs, and this movie is generating a lot of buzz because of that. I liked it. I thought it was a lot of fun. It's very silly. At the same time, it's very much like a you can tell it's like one of those movies where the director is using the film as like his own personal therapy session. Like, I don't know if you know the story of Oz Perkins, or if our listeners do, I'll give a brief rundown. So Oz Perkins, he is the son of Anthony Perkins, the actor from Psycho. And Anthony Perkins, of course, died of AIDS. He was never out of the closet during his life, but he was, you know, a gay man, and he died of AIDS. And then Oz Perkins' mother, whose name was Barry Berenson, was killed in 9/11. She was on one of the planes that crashed into the Twin Towers. So Oz Perkins, both his parents died under these like extreme traumatizing ways. And this movie is very much about like the absurdity of death. And it's all about how people deal with death or how they don't deal with death, and how just you know, surreal death can be. Like, I feel like anyone who has experienced like the death of a loved one, you go through so many emotions. Like, you don't just go through grief, you just go through all these like different emotions at once. And this movie is very much sort of like leaning into like the absurdity of it all, just how like, you know, it's a simple fact that we're all going to die someday. We can't escape that. And we all have to, you know, for lack of a better word, we have to live with the fact that we're all going to die someday. And that's really weird. It's weird that like we're born into this world and eventually we're all going to die. And this movie, like it's a horror movie, it's a comedy, and it's all about just like death as this sort of like, unstoppable force in a way. And I thought it was pretty good. I think it has some narrative issues here and there, but I liked it overall. I thought it was funny, it was gory. I had a good time watching it.
So you've talked on this podcast before about how your take on Long Legs is that movie is secretly or not so secretly a comedy, or at least funnier than a lot of other people sort of maybe interpreted at the time. And so this movie, I'm curious, Odds Perkins has, I think he's said, and like certainly I've experienced from the trailers, that this movie is much more overtly funny. So what did you think about this one in terms of the tonal switch from Long Legs to this?
Yeah, like this leans 100% into being a comedy. It's very deliberately funny. I still think Long Legs is deliberately funny, but this is like more so. Like this is more interested in being funny than it is being, like, I would argue this isn't scary at all, this movie, but I'm fine with that. Like, I don't have a problem with that. So I enjoyed this, yeah.
So did the comedy aspects of it work for you? Because it seems like the comedy in Long Legs worked for you, but that was because that was more subtle. I was curious if the monkeys and its approach to comedy might be like a little too, I don't know, overt or broad or something that might like have you react differently to it.
It's definitely very broad, but it did work for me most of all. Like there aren't really like jokes here. It's more of like situational comedy, just like the absurdity of how, like there's this one montage where they just keep showing a bunch of people dying via horrible ways, and it's so over the top, and it's very darkly funny. I really liked Theo James in this. He actually plays two characters. He plays a pair of twins, and I am not really familiar with this guy at all, but I thought he was really good in it. I'm looking at his resume now. He was in like the Divergent films, which I never saw.
He was in White Lotus season 2.
I actually have not watched that. I saw the first scene, but I have not seen season 2 yet. But okay. I was really impressed with him in this. I thought he was really good in this, the way he like handles the comedy of it all. So yeah, I dug the monkey.
Awesome. All right. So on the opposite side of the scale, you watched a Koyaanisqatsi, which is like a wordless, essentially entire montage of a movie set to Philip Glass music. So what do you think about this one?
Yeah, man, I love this. This movie like broke my brain in a good way. I should add, I watched this on edibles, which I feel like is the ideal way to watch this movie, but I imagine it's probably good watching sober as well. But yeah, for those who don't know, this is a non-narrative documentary. It was released in the 80s, and it's just like a series of landscapes and people. Like it starts off in nature, and then it moves into cities, and it shows like skyscrapers, and it shows people going to work, and it shows factory floors, and it's just all these shots, and like it uses various like different cinematic tricks. Like there's time lapse and there's slow motion, and it's all done to this really like loud church-like Philip Glass score. And I don't know, man, this just like blew me away just watching this. I was just like, holy shit, like I have never really seen anything quite like this. And like I said, I watched this on edibles, so I'm sure that made it better. Like there's this one part where the camera is like out on the street. I think it's in Las Vegas, and it's filming people walking by. And as they walk by, they notice the camera and they look directly into the camera. And in my like intoxicated state, I was like, I feel like they're looking at me. Like, can these people see through time, and are they seeing me in my living room watching this? Like, that's like where my brain went. I was just like, what is going on here? Like, I don't know, but I really recommend this. I think it's just on Tubi right now, so you can watch it for free. I got the Blu-ray from the Criterion Collection. There's actually a trilogy. There's two more, but I've read the other two are not as good. So I'm kind of like afraid to watch them because I like this one so much, but I'll probably get around to watching them eventually.
Yeah, I think Samsara is another one that's in the trilogy. And I remember seeing that in theaters in 2011 or thereabouts when it came out. And I think I saw that one first. So I had the experience that you had watching Kyoano Suketsu when I watched Samsara. And it's basically, I mean, it's almost exactly the same setup and format. And it's just like a feature length montage that basically you kind of lock into it as a viewer and like settle in and like your mind starts working in different ways and you start drawing connections between all these images that are thrown at you and you start thinking about life and civilization and like all the things that we've accomplished as a species and all the horrors that we've inflicted on each other and all of the potential that we have as a as a people. And it's just like your mind starts spinning out in these kind of wonderful ways watching these movies. So I would definitely recommend people check them out if you've not seen anything like this before. It's very unusual, but in a really cool way, I think. Okay, so there's one more thing you wanted to talk about. What's this last movie, Chris?
Yeah, so I rewatched Knives Out. My girlfriend had never seen it, so I was like, let's watch Knives Out, and then we can watch, you know, Glass Onion. We haven't gotten to that yet, but we can watch that. And then the third one, Wake Up Dead Man, is coming out this year. And yeah, I don't have much to say. I love Knives Out. I like it a lot. I will say watching it again now, I noticed like the first like 20 or so minutes do kind of drag a little bit because it's a lot of setup. And I actually was reading like an interview with Rian Johnson, and he was even saying that when he first wrote the script and he showed it to people, a lot of people had the same comment that they were like, this first act kind of drags and then the movie really picks up. And I didn't really notice that as much for the first time I saw the movie, but I definitely noticed it this time where like the first act of this movie is like all the characters being introduced for, and they're sitting down for an interview and there's a lot of table setting. And I don't know if I was like so enraptured with the movie the first time I saw it that played better for me, but like upon rewatch, it's a little awkward, but once you get past that, this movie just sings, man. I just love the way it's put together. The cast is great. I don't know what the consensus is. I actually like the sequel. I like Glass Onion a little bit more. I think it's funnier. It's a little more clever the way it plays out. I think like by that time, Rian Johnson had really figured out what he wanted to do with these movies. So I think it plays a little better, but that's just me. But I'm very excited for the third one. I really like these movies. I really like Rian Johnson. He's really good at what he does. And yeah. I love watching Daniel Craig do his thing in these movies. So yeah, Knives Out, good movie,
super fun stuff. Yeah, I want to rewatch both of these before Wake Up Dead Man, and right now I would put the original Knives Out over Glass Onion for me personally, just because I think the aesthetic is so cool, that like fall leaves changing, you know, a house out in the middle of,
yeah,
it's, I think it's Boston, but it doesn't feel like a city movie, you know, it feels like a countryside type of movie. And then Glass Onion is so like islandy and beachy and like sun dappled in a much different way. So I like the, you know, all the wool coats and the costumes and stuff like that. It just kind of like has such a different feel, and like I prefer that aesthetic, I think, in the first Knives Out. So I'm wondering, like, it's been a while since I've seen these movies, and I don't think I've ever seen Glass Onion more than just the one time that I saw it in theaters when that first came out. So I'll be interested to see sort of how I land as we head into Wake Up Dead Man, which we'll definitely be talking about on the podcast as that comes out. So cool. All right. Well, I think that'll do it for today's episode of the show. You can find more about a lot of the stuff that we talked about at slashfilm.com. Slash Film Daily is published every weekday, bringing you the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to take a minute to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That really helps us out a lot. Tell your friends about the show any way you can. Thanks so much for listening, and we will talk to you all tomorrow.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. Instead, go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI and a watch and tab on any plan. Only on Verizon.
With new line on my plan. Service plan required for watch and tab. Additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
Hair thinning can happen for so many reasons. Whether it's stress or hormones or anything, at Nutrafol, we've learned that real change starts below the surface. Our hair growth supplements take a whole body approach and target the key root causes of hair thinning, so you can see visibly thicker, stronger hair in 3 to 6 months.
Hair growth starts from the inside at Nutrafol.com. That's Nutrafol.com.